Patrick A. Lee is a longtime political and human rights activist in Haiti. He served as the Secretary of State for National Defense under Jean-Bertrand Aristide's first term in office and was the coordinator against drug trafficking from 1991 to 1994.
In the context of a coup d'etat, massive violence, and a UN occupation, he is a necessary and unheard radical voice in the Haitian political landscape. Here, he debunks the myths promoted by Haiti's elite about kidnappings and insecurity in the country, speaks about the difference between armed resistance and terrorism, and breaks down Canada's role in creating the human rights disaster that exists in the country today.
This interview is recorded in Port-au-Prince by Aaron Lakoff and Leslie Bagg for CKUT Radio and Kevin Pina of KPFA's Flashpoints.
But we want to talk about the current political situation as it stands in Haiti right now, specifically in the lead up to the elections, which are now scheduled for February the 7th. Yesterday, we had a chance to go and cover a demonstration led by the group of 184 to put pressure on MINUSTA to take more action in the poor and disenfranchised areas of Cité Soleil. And as we know, last Monday there was the general strike, again with the same goal. Can you talk a bit about this political process, what the group of 184 is doing right now, and what you think that their goals are through these pressure tactics?
I believe, you know, in the last couple of weeks, maybe even 1 month ago, the group of 184 have more and more been exposed for what they are, which is an attempt by the so-called economic elites to reestablish their hegemony on Haitian politics. And I think that their latest, attempts or actions have exposed them even more for what they are. And I think they're losing whatever credibility they have or they had really, really fast. First of all, here are people that were all for elections and are suddenly saying that elections are not possible given the situation. And the situation is not so much one of insecurity, because, you know, if you really want to see insecurity, you should go to the places that the 184 have created over the years and the decades, which are the shanty towns of Haiti. These are their creation. That's where real insecurity reigns. Not only, I'd say, insecurity regarding to rampant criminal activity, but insecurity touching upon what you're going to eat tomorrow, whether or not you will be able to send your kid to school. Anyway, suddenly, for 2 years, they were saying that election were not only possible, but they were the election of the last chance. And now, they're saying the opposite. And the real reason is that, apparently, the Haitian people are once again staking their ground and saying they should get involved in politics, and politics should be decided on the basis of one man, one vote. And this is what is scaring the 184 and Mr. Appet and Mr. Boulos in particular. And that's why Now, what they want to create is an environment of instability, an environment of unpredictability, whereas they could, you know, either reschedule the elections to give them more time to adapt to the new situation, or simply come up with a new formula of what they call consensual democracy. Democracy by consensus between the best of a society, the richer of a society, that can go around the one man, one vote principle. So, you know, for me, this is a last-ditch attempt to scuttle the election, because now the election, who looked so nice a year or 6 months ago, when it was clear that the majority of the Haitian population would abstain, mm-hmm. now looks suddenly like a danger between, because so many people actually want to participate. Mm-hmm. So this is the situation we are facing. I believe it is a dangerous one, but I also believe that we are witnessing the defeat of this last ditch attempt to kind of revamp a system that is really, you know, up to its last a couple of inches.
So let's talk about the elections here in Haiti. I have two questions for you. One is, given what you were explaining about the dangers, the perceived dangers of these elections on the part of the group of 184, can these elections actually happen on February the 7th? And can Préval, who has polled to be the favored candidate, can he win?
I'd say that, you know, except for some real rough play, Préval is going to win. Whether or not this will solve the structural problems of Haitian society is another question. But it is so obvious that all these so-called leaders of the civil society and all these presidential candidates have absolutely no credit within the population at large, that Préval is going to win. And that's the reason for this whole panic and this whole improvisation taking place. So of that, I'm sure. But of course, there's going to be a post-electoral situation. As a matter of fact, the election is going to last a day, a month at the most, whereas the post-election is where we're going to be living. And I'm not very sure that the 184 plus and the so-called political elite is going to accept once and for all that democracy means that every citizen has a right to vote. It's going to be, even in the, you know, with the most optimistic view, it's going to be a messed up election. If it had been a real election, I think the Lavalas current would have won over 80% of the popular vote. The way things are being rigged, they might win over 50% and make a second round useless. But, you know, time has changed. Some people are unwilling to come to terms with that reality. You know, what, for example, the white minority in South Africa was finally able to realize and head for the negotiation table, it seems that the Haitian economic elite are still unable or unwilling to do. And yet they're going to have to do it, because the time of the virtual apartheid are over. The Haitian people are never going back into a hole and be kept there.
Right now, one of the interesting things on the international level that's happened in the last couple of weeks, there was a news article stating that Brazil is now hinting that they might want to pull out of MINUSTA. Right now in Canada, there is a campaign that is calling for Canadian forces to leave Haiti. What would that start to look like if some of these international actors who have been propping up MINUSTA, propping up the group of 184, what would happen if they ceased to grant their support to these institutions?
I'll tell you what, I'm ambiguous about that, because I think even though I did not welcome MINUSTA, you know, and I want them to leave as soon as possible, the one aggressing the MINUSTA are the one who least want them to pull out. What they want is for the MINUSTA to act as their hired guns to replace the defunct Haitian army and do the job of terrorizing poor Haitians. And the MINUSTA is kind of hesitating to do this very job. But if the MINUSTA lives, the one who are going to be the most sorry about that are the very one putting the pressure on it, the very one who put so much pressure on the Brazilian general that he ended up probably shooting himself. They go, and the reaction forces no longer have the protection of the UN guns. UN guns who, as you know, have been directed mostly against the poor people of Haiti. I've never seen any, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning raid up in Pétionville, breaking down people gates and ransacking their house, looking for weapons that they would have probably found. You see, so the UN mostly has been protecting the interest of the moneyed minority of Haiti. So as you can probably witness, they've never asked for a pullout by a MINUSTA. What they've asked for is a more active role by MINUSTA in terrorizing, domesticating the masses who are once again on the move. There has been a terrible feeling of depression of this country, on this country, you know, especially after, you know, they voted once, twice, and three times, you know, attempted to vote a first time in November 1987, were massacred, and then their elected leaders were simply overthrown or kidnapped. So there was a moment where it looked like all this had worked and the people would go back to a kind of passivity. It seems that the Haitian people are getting beyond that, and I think all the moves you've seen, you know, all the strident speeches by the likes of Apaid and Boulos reflect their own panic in front of their total lack of success in whatever project they had for this country. They've had 2 years, and we see the results. And I think that's the reason why you're also feeling a kind of irritation in the international community toward this sector of Haiti's political life, who had promised so much and been unable to deliver anything. We are worse 2 years later than we ever were in all our history. You know, it's a total mess. And these guys are actually protesting against their own mess. And, you know, it's fooling no one, certainly not the Haitian people, but more and more, even their allies in the international community are starting to think that they've been flogging a dead horse. That's my feeling.
Patrick, this is Kevin Pina, Flashpoint Special Correspondent for KPFA. I'm here today with Leslie Bag and with Aaron Lakoff. Mm-hmm. We're sitting in the Hotel Ife in Pétionville doing an interview. Now, this question of kidnapping. Of course, the Group 184, APED, Boulos, and Baker, particularly, have been talking about kidnapping as a way of putting pressure on MINUSTA to attack Cité Soleil, to clean up what they call or a band of criminals and quote-unquote bandits, which of course many people in that community believe to be code word for Lavala supporters, those who have called for the return of Jean-Bertrand Aristide, and or those who have participated in large campaign rallies for former President Préval, presidential candidate René Préval in Cité Soleil today. Now, I understand that the judge, Jean-Paul Paires,
yes,
who is the same judge who is responsible for keeping Father Gerard Jean-Just in prison, mm-hmm, recently released Stanley Handal,
yeah,
and three high-ranking police officers who were implicated in kidnappings in the capital. Also, AHP, Agence Haïtienne de Presse, recently released a report from the Haitian police that they recently broke a kidnapping ring in Pétionville, mm-hmm, not Cité Soleil. Can you comment on the contradiction between what APED, Boulos, and Baker and their accusations of the main kidnappers being in Cité Soleil versus this question of Stanley Handal, who is a child of one of the largest, wealthiest families in Haiti, having recently been released by Judge Jean-Pierre Pauls, and this question of a kidnapping ring in Pétionville?
First of all, Kevin, the judge did sign a release order, but it has not been executed yet. But even the fact that he signed it, whereas he never did the same for people who are political prisoners, tells a lot about the state of Haitian justice. But coming to this new wave of kidnapping, one recognizes a certain modus operandi, right? What in English they say, standard operating procedures. We've seen that when it was time to do a preemptive coup d'etat back in 1987, when it was clear that the Haitian people were going to elect themselves their own leaders. And at that time, it was not Jean-Bertrand Aristide, but one of the clowns who is now running, that was Mr. Gourgue, you know? But that's why I've been saying every chance I got that, you know, the qualms, the hostility of these people is not toward whatever leader comes up as the choice of the Haitian people. It's a hostility toward the Haitian people themselves and their right to pick their own government.
And you think kidnapping has been used in that way?
It is being used in that way. And it's no coincidence that the acceleration in the kidnapping happened at the same time, for example, that Préval was appearing more and more as the overwhelming leading candidate. It is no coincidence that it happened when the same people who were saying that we got to go to the election started saying we can't go to the election because of the security or insecurity climate. We've seen that before. And we also know that, for example, Mr. Boulos has had relations with gangs in Cité Soleil even before there existed gangs. At the time, and especially during the coup d'etat of 1991, when he was leading this so-called Centre pour la Santé, CDS, you know, he was using the gangs of FRAP to keep the population in check. And there is a man...
I want to be clear now. You're saying that Reginald Boulos, Dr. Reginald Boulos, the current president of the Haitian Chamber of Commerce,
yes,
was involved with gangs in Cité Soleil, working with FRAP, the Front for Advancement and Progress in Haiti, the CIA-trained paramilitary death squad, after the coup of 1991.
Yes, all during the coup, which lasted 3 years. You know, it was not an overnight affair. And even before that, you know, there's the whole question of what CDS was doing with pregnant women experimenting medical treatment, which could have been positive, I don't know. But it was being done without the knowledge of the patients, and it was being done for companies and university in the U.S., which could never have gotten with such a protocol in the U.S. proper, and it was being done in Cité Soleil. So, we're dealing with people that are very, very shady and cannot take the moral high ground as we speak.
Wasn't Dr. Reginald Boulos also implicated? He owns a company called Farvel Pharmaceuticals, which produced a children's cough syrup which poisoned 60 children,
more
including
than 60.
Many in Cité Soleil.
No, much more than 60. I'll tell you. It was not him directly, but when you say
the company.
He is one of the owner of the company, and his brother was running the company.
Rudolph.
And he is now running for senator. Unfortunately, all these facts are not known by the international public opinion. You know, I went looking for a job in Canada after, I believe it was in 1997 or 98, you know, I was more or less in exile. And I, you know, submitted for a position in a pharmaceutical company because this is my specialty. And I mentioned that I had once worked for the Boulos's. And they told me, you know, these guys killed 87 kids. And, you know, so, I mean, this is some serious crime, either by negligence or by putting money in front of everything, including sick children's life. And this is the kind of people we are dealing with. I think they're the one who are at the forefront of this losing battle. But they're not the only ones. But they're the one who have now the hegemony on this attempt to give new life to a system that has only produced death, illiteracy, and sheer misery. And that's it, you know. And they've succeeded in presenting, for example, the so-called gang leaders in Cité Soleil, among which I admit there are some pure criminal elements, but many of them are nothing but the equivalent of those who raised the banner against slavery before it became an organized fight under Toussaint Louverture or Dessalines. You know, they are the Maroons, the ones, if you want, that are at the forefront, the avant-garde of the fight against the prison order. And they should not be painted as a sheer gangster. They are part of the solution rather than be part of the problem.